Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Once more, the National Broadcasting Company opens the day's coverage of the news around the globe with reports from NBC's own on-the-scene representatives. First, this morning, we'll hear from Sidney Albright in Java. We take you now to Batavia.
Sidney Albright speaking in Batavia, Java. The time is 8:30 Monday evening. Today's communique of the Netherlands Indies Fighting Forces reads, enemy aircraft were observed over various points of the outer perimeter. No bombs were dropped. At one of our airdromes, the anti-aircraft batteries went into action in order to drive off a group of enemy planes. One of these planes was damaged so badly that very probably it was unable to reach its base. End of the communique. The new Japanese landing at Weston in British North Borneo is viewed here as a development of considerable significance because it is felt the Japanese are maneuvering into position for a concentrated attack on Singapore. But at the same time, local observers are not overlooking the active strategy in Europe of doing the unexpected. Therefore, it is quite likely that encirclement of Singapore may shortly be synchronized with a large-scale sweeping movement along the coast of North Borneo in the direction of Tarakan. In any case, the Japanese will try to strengthen their position in Borneo as much as possible, meanwhile hoping to focus attention on Singapore, so that the drive can eventually be made on the oil fields in Tarakan and Balikpapan. Semi-official quarters have made it clear that such a plan will fail. Constant vigilance will be maintained in the oil region, regardless of any Japanese attempts to divert attention. As yet, there are no actual details available of the enemy landings in Weston. A maximum penalty of death can be imposed on persons committing crimes during blackouts or air raid alarms, according to a recent government announcement. Robberies are punishable with a maximum of 7 years imprisonment, regardless of the value of the article stolen. The death penalty can be imposed for such crimes as robbery with force, arson, destruction of military objectives, authorities are determined to maintain safety and order during emergencies, as is evidenced by the severity of the penalty. The Commander-in-Chief of the Army has ordered an investigation of all employees of business firms who were exempted from active duty under the General Mobilization Order because they were considered indispensable to their companies. The purpose of this investigation is to secure additional men for the fighting forces. It is natural that the war with Japan has strongly influenced civilian enterprises. In many cases, companies have closed their doors. On the other hand, the organization work necessary to establish contacts with new markets for purchases of essentials has proven almost insurmountable because of the shortage of personnel. The local press reports that newspapers in Sydney are urging the staff of a large number of Australian troops to the Middle Eastern countries. These reports recommend these reinforcements because of the realistic way in which the Netherlanders are meeting the present emergency. At year's end, the stream of lava from Java's most active volcano, the Smurl, practically came to a standstill. The stream reached a distance of more than 6 kilometers and is the longest ever recorded in this country. The volcano is not yet entirely normal because of light earthquakes which have been felt at nearby estates. But it is thought that the real danger has passed. The new Lieutenant Governor General of the Netherlands Indies, Dr. H. J. Van Vogt, made his broadcast in the Malay language to the native population in which he said, it is well known that the Japanese are bad linguists and, as a rule, have great difficulty in expressing themselves in a foreign language. They also are unable to understand the thoughts which are expressed in foreign words. One might almost say that this was the reason why they used such singular expressions to indicate various deeds and circumstances. For instance, the work of Japanese soldiers in China, which has already cost many hundred thousands of lives and led to the destruction of many cities, is not a war, but an incident. It is just the same with the famous Cold Prosperity and the equally famous Liberation of Asia, about which the Japanese generals and admirals are constantly talking. Everybody knows that the Japanese, wherever they move with their armies, are thunder to thunder.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Sidney Albright in Batavia. We now return you to New York.
And here in New York, a dispatch from Vichy. The people of Paris are smarting under a new German punishment in the form of a partial 5 p.m. curfew after fresh anti-Nazi incidents in Paris and Brest. According to the Berlin radio, the Paris curfew was placed on cafes and other public places because unidentified assailants had exploded a bomb in a restaurant frequented by Germans. The radio added there were no victims and only slight material damage. Now, these incidents coincide with an apparent chilling of French-German relations, said in Stockholm to be at their worst since the armistice. And now we take you next to London.
This is London. John McBain speaking. The Japanese threat to Singapore has increased in the past few days, but military quarters in London don't regard the position as too serious in spite of the Japanese landings on the west coast of Malaya that menace the British left flank. News reaching London today from the fighting area is scarce, but British observers regard the Japanese report of 90,000 Australians landing in Singapore as a feeler to try to find out whether the British are sending reinforcements. There's no confirmation here of the Italian statement that the Axis forces in Libya have evacuated Souloum. It's probably true because the British say the recapture of Bardia made the holding of Souloum practically an impossibility. Military circles here say that on the Russian front, the Russians are in a position to carry out a double pincer movement in front of Moscow. The Russian recapture of Borovsk, southwest of Moscow, made the pincer movement likely. And the Russian pincers threaten the whole German position in the center. Latest official word reaching London is that the Russian advance is continuing on the whole of the central front. Mr. Eden's radio speech last night gave the British new assurance of the Russian fighting spirit. The Yorkshire Post, which sometimes reflects Foreign Office opinion, says today, in Russia, Nazi fanaticism has been outmatched by the unflinching self-sacrifice of the Russian patriots. The message of Mr. Eden's broadcast is the message of the Russian trade unionists, now among us, that we must work as never before to make certain that these valiant hosts Hitler has raised against himself shall never lack for the tools with which they are so eager to finish the job of his utter destruction. So far, the Free French National Committee hasn't received any official invitation to represent France in the 26th Power Declaration. The Free French are greatly interested in press reports of an American statement about the United States government's readiness to receive adherence to the principles of the Declaration from appropriate authorities which are not governments. The Free French represent millions of French men and women who don't think like Vichy or the German propagandists in Paris. Men and women who are waiting and planning for the day to strike back at the Germans. In view of that fact, the Free French hope for some sort of understanding with the other allies that will recognize France's place in the world effort against the Axis. Certainly the Saint-Pierre and Miquelon affair shows the need for some kind of direct contact between the United States and the Free French to achieve coordination of war plans that affect France and the French Empire. German reprisals against the French in the occupied area seem to be on the increase. The Free French radio in Brazzaville says a German officer was shot and wounded in Amiens. The Germans fined the town about $160,000. British broadcasts aimed at the continent have been naming Quislings in France as in the other occupied countries. We've heard stories that these Quislings are not having too easy a time, that they, like the German soldiers, sometimes disappear on dark nights. British observers are pointing out that commando raids should be increased to set the stage for a full-scale invasion of the continent, to worry the Germans and strike down the Quislings. The London Evening Standard today says, picture a German garrison isolated in some coastal town in Norway. The Quislings are bereft of authority as they are of respect. Only the bayonet and the gibbet govern. It isn't a pleasant task for the German soldiers. They live amid scowling faces and eyes fiery with hate. Now to the perpetual menace of revolt within is added the peril of attack from without. And the Standard says that for the Norwegians, Frenchmen, Dutchmen, Greeks, Spaniards, and all the rest, the best British propaganda is to keep up their hopes with news that British soldiers have returned to the soil of Europe. Talking of commandos, one British sports writer today urges that professional boxers and football players be allowed to form their own commando units, units that would really be tough. This is John McVane in London, returning you to the National Broadcasting Company in New York.
Here we are back in New York in the NBC newsroom. So far this morning, we've heard from Sidney Albright speaking from Batavia in Java. the NBC newsroom here in New York, and John McVane from London. And now this morning, just before going to Washington for Mr. Godwin and his usual capital commentary, we're going to try to contact our reporter, Robert Magadoff, who is stationed and has been stationed for many months now in Kuibyshev in Russia. We'll make the switch at this point. Go ahead, Kuibyshev.
Hello, NBC. This is Robert Magadoff speaking. The Russians are confident struggle for air superiority, which is ahead of them this year. Despite a treacherous attack last June accompanied by surprise mass raids on Soviet airdromes, the Red Air Force has given a no mean account of itself last year. The Germans kept announcing time and again that the Soviet air arm has been destroyed, but the Russians continue to cling to the sky. They won the battle for the sky of Moscow and Leningrad. In the course of the winter months, they practically chased the Luftwaffe from the Western Front. During my two visits to the Moscow Front, I saw not a single German plane, nor had any enemy craft appeared over Moscow in the 18 days I had stayed there. The greatest achievement of the Soviet air arm has been the invention of the anti-tank plane, which the Germans have christened Black Death. The action of this plane, plus the coordination of Red Aviation and artillery, are greatly responsible for the recent Russian victory. Talking about the immediate future, Major General of Aviation Michael Shcherbakov said that he expects following developments which are bound to help the Russians win the battle for the Soviet sky in 1942. Quote, the striking power of our anti-tank planes will be increased. The speed and maneuverability of our fighters is being constantly improved. Not even the best German ace flying the best German plane will be able to get away from our new fighters. Our bombers will be made to fly ever higher and carry heavier loads ever farther, but our pilots, who are constantly bettering their great skill. Unquote. These improvements, which have already been realized in part, and the continued Anglo-American aid, are bound to become a vital factor in the battle for the Soviet sky, which the Russians are confident of winning. I now return you to the NBC in New York.
That was Robert Magadoff speaking from Kuibyshev in Russia. And now for word on events at home, here's Earl Godwin reporting from the newsroom in Washington.
And good morning, folks. I think possibly the most important thing that happens today, in a day that has a thousand things on the Uncle Sam's day book, that this may be the beginning of the era of final victory. Plans are no longer for defense, for the final effacement of Hitlerism. The money raising, the spending. And the moment the forces land, sea, and sky of this United States and United Nations are beginning today to assault and invade the Axis wherever it rears ahead. The plans are now apparent. The most eventful of this whole business, I think, is the gathering together today of the motor industry, labor and government, and the motor heads. They're after a definite objective. The first phase of the new all-out program for the motor industry is the $5 billion program, which will be explained today. First, the industry must prepare itself and retool itself and then get going on the final output. The Association of Motor Manufacturers says it did not delay war production and make cars for the American public on the business-as-usual basis, but that war plans change so fast they simply couldn't keep up. The fact that a few days we become the cupboard and arsenal and general economic pool of all resources for the United Nations is entirely different from the situation when we first started to raise a draft army, and that's all from Washington at this time.
And that's the news, ladies and gentlemen, both at home and abroad. Keep tuned to this station for the latest news. This is the National Broadcasting Company.